This is KYUK, public radio for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. I'm Samantha Watson. Individuals who have been impacted by Typhoon Halong may be eligible for unemployment benefits. Last week, the state's Department of Labor announced that anyone who lived or was employed at the time of the disaster in the Lower Kuskokwim Regional Education Attendance Area, the Lower Yukon REAA, or the Northwest Arctic Borough areas may be eligible for disaster unemployment assistance. That's a special kind of unemployment benefit that supports people whose ability to work was impacted by a disaster. To qualify, the typhoon must have impacted your ability to return to the place where you worked, or if an injury impacted your ability to work. People who suddenly became a major support to their household following a death related to the typhoon, they may also be eligible. Or if you were scheduled to begin work in an area impacted by the typhoon, you may also qualify. The assistance payments would be between $153 and $370 per week for up to 27 weeks. The deadline to apply is February 20th, 2026. People who want to apply will be asked for their social security numbers, as well as dates they worked and contact information for employers. Self-employed people or those who were previously unemployed may also be eligible and will be asked to provide a record of their wages. For more information and to see if you might qualify, call 907-465-4691. That's 907-465-4691. Free interpreter services are available. The city of Bethel has agreed to pay a combined settlement of $10 million to two people accusing Bethel police officers of using excessive force. KYUK's Evan Erickson has more. And a warning to listeners, the story contains audio and descriptions of violence that some people may find disturbing.
The settlement resolves two separate police brutality lawsuits brought against the city. The largest award goes to Bernard Mayle. He'll get $7 million for a December 2023 beating that he says left him with permanent brain damage.
Light him up!
Body cam footage of the incident shows former officer Jonathan Murphy tase, pepper spray, and beat Mayle repeatedly in the head as he struggles to shield himself in a vehicle. The beating came after a traffic stop that led to Murphy chasing Mayle through town after he radioed fellow officers to say that Mayle had hit him with a vehicle. There's no footage showing Murphy being hit by a car, but it does show Murphy grab and punch Mayle in the head. According to Mayle's civil complaint, Murphy continued to say that Mayle had struck him with a vehicle. Mayle was charged with felony assault, but that charge was later dismissed. Officer Murphy is facing criminal charges, which are set to go to trial next month in Bethel. Murphy has pleaded not guilty to misdemeanor charges of assault, providing false information, and tampering with public records. All three carry maximum sentences of 1 year in jail. It is not clear whether Murphy will be allowed to stand trial remotely. According to his LinkedIn account, he currently serves as the chief of police in Diamond City, Arkansas. The Diamond City Police Department did not immediately respond to a call seeking more information about Murphy's employment. The smaller $3 million settlement the city has agreed to pay stems from a suit that also names Murphy, along with two other former Bethel police officers. The suit claimed that officers used excessive force and illegally arrested Bethel resident Nicholas Kerr in October 2023. In body cam footage, officers roll up on Kerr, who is seen apparently sleeping in the rear seat of a car. They knock on the window to wake him up. Kerr puts on his socks and shoes and then is pulled out of the vehicle and thrown onto the ground by Murphy and Officer Lloyd Willis. The footage from a camera worn by a third officer, Sean Neal, does not make clear what provoked the sudden escalation. The video shows Neal tase Kerr while he's already pinned and on the ground.
You're gonna get it again! Put your hands behind your back!
Kerr panics and screams out multiple times that he can't breathe, at which point Neal pepper sprays him in the face.
You can breathe, you're talking.
You're gonna get it again, stop!
Stop! Stop.
In this case, no criminal charges have been brought against Bethel police. The city of Bethel has had problems with police misconduct in the past. In 2023, the city settled a case for $275,000 after a man who was arrested by Bethel police was forced to stand outside barefoot in sub-zero temperatures. And in 2015, the city paid out a $175,000 settlement after former officer Andrew Reed repeatedly threw a man to the ground in the Alaska Commercial Company store parking lot. Reed later pleaded guilty to misdemeanor charges of fourth-degree assault and official misconduct and was sentenced to serve 120 days in jail. But according to court records, Reed never returned to Bethel to serve his sentence. There's still an active warrant out for his arrest. In Bethel, I'm Evan Erickson.
For decades, Alaska officials have dreamed of a pipeline that would ferry natural gas hundreds of miles from the North Slope to an export terminal in Cook Inlet. Over the years, the state has pumped hundreds of millions of dollars into designing and permitting for the project, which is estimated to cost tens of billions of dollars to construct. While President Trump has framed the pipeline as a centerpiece to his plans for unleashing the country's energy, there are many questions surrounding the mega project, including whether there's a large enough market for the gas it would carry and what kind of environmental impact it would have. Reporter Lois Parshley recently wrote about the project for the nonprofit news outlet Grist. She told Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early that despite many backers saying the time to build a pipeline is now, there's still a lot of skepticism.
The short answer is there isn't yet much hard evidence that this project will pay off at the scale that's being promised. To start, there are no binding long-term contracts with overseas buyers. Costs for steel and construction have continued to rise, and global LNG markets are becoming more competitive and uncertain as countries accelerate a transition away from fossil fuels. So there's a big question about whether this project is economically viable, and if it does move forward anyway, if Alaska will face cost overruns that leave both state ratepayers and federal taxpayers on the hook.
So Glenfarne is the company that's set to operate the pipeline, and they've also received a lot of state support. What does the public actually know about the state's dealings with Glenfarne, and what's their background in pipeline management?
Very little, but that's a great question. Glenfarne Group is a privately held energy firm that has no experience to date operating a liquefied natural gas export terminal. They were given a 75% stake in the project by the state in a no-bid contract whose details have been kept even from the state legislature. And Glenfarne has said that they don't plan to release updated estimates of the project's costs.
Is there any reason why they're not releasing that to the public, or why legislators are having such trouble?
So far, both Glenfarne Group and the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation have cited confidentiality agreements and claimed these are trade secrets.
And you write that Glenfarne stands to reap a lot of financial benefit from the pipeline, even if it isn't built. How does that work?
Yeah, so Glenfarne could make a lot of money even if a mile of pipe is never laid. The company now owns permits, engineering work, and other assets that give it leverage in future deals within the state or in qualifying for federal support. For example, Nat Hertz's great reporting showed recently that Glenfarne is working with the private utility NSTAR to develop plans to import liquefied natural gas that overlaps with other existing utility projects, potentially raising costs for ratepayers while laying the groundwork for their export facility. One expert nationally recently noted in a public comment on LNG export terminals that this kind of leverage is pretty typical, and that insiders like Glenfarne can, quote, take fees and bonuses and profit even if projects like these fail.
So the pipeline has run into pushback from a surprising group of entities, local energy utilities. What is their concern with the project?
So utilities, especially in South Central Alaska, face dwindling energy supplies. Natural gas in Cook Inlet, which has historically provided most of the state's supply, have become unprofitable to extract. And as a result, utilities have been warning that the region could face rolling blackouts. So this supply crunch is one that Glenfarne argues can only be solved in the long term by the pipeline. But a lot of the people I spoke to said that the pipeline won't actually solve this affordability crisis. Without foreign buyers, the pipeline is going to be overbuilt. And the Alaska Utilities Working Group wrote in a report that current natural gas demand in Alaska simply does not support a pipeline project. Many of Alaska's power plants aren't currently set up to run off natural gas, and converting them will cost money. These are existing assets. And many of the experts I spoke to suggest that the cost of energy from any LNG pipeline would likely be higher than just importing gas.
Well, assuming the gas line never gets built, besides the wasted public funds, which are pretty significant, why else should Alaskans care?
I would argue that all Americans should care. The U.S. is now the world's largest LNG exporter prior to this project being built, and the industry is increasingly built on debt, not demand. Analysts warn that the LNG sector may be approaching a bubble, and investors writ large are exposed to climate risks and these weakening markets. One recent report, which was quite alarming, warned that declining credit quality could lead to debt packaging similar to the 2008 mortgage crisis. So as one source told me, every taxpayer should be furious that the federal government is chasing this project.
So this push to sort of kickstart this natural gas pipeline in Alaska, it comes kind of at the expense of other renewable energy projects. How is that squaring away?
That's a great question. As you noted, Trump has cut more than $1 billion for Alaskan renewable projects, including pretty significant ones near Fairbanks and Anchorage. And sources have told me that this leaves Alaskans vulnerable to volatile energy price hikes. Senator Bill Wielichowski told me that this basically creates what he calls a hostage situation, where Alaskans are forced to develop fossil fuels at whatever price companies want to charge.
Lois Parshley is a reporter with Grist. Her story can be found on their website, www.grist.org. This is KYUK News. I'm Samantha Watson. Koyana for listening. Please share your news tips, comments, or suggestions. You can email us at news@kyuk.org or message us on Facebook. And stay tuned for Yuktun Gnumchit coming up.